Robin and the Wren are the Lord God's cock and hen. This was a way that country people had of trying to explain something that they didn't quite understand. They often realised, or obviously realised, that some birds were had much brighter coloured males than females. If you've had a trip round the Wildfowl Trust at Arundel, you'll have seen that male ducks are much more brightly coloured than female ones. And knowing that already, country people applied it to other sorts of things. The robin was a nice brightly coloured bird that they recognised. Of course, they couldn't tell which was the male and which was the female robin. They both looked the same. So they made up this little rhyme, thinking that the robin with his bright red breast was the male, and the dull-coloured little wren, Jenny Wren, was the female, both of the same kind of bird. Of course, nowadays we know that they're not.
For such a small bird, little Jenny Wren has a phenomenal voice. They sing most of the year round and make such a terrific noise for a tiny bird. Just listen to this. Well, there's the wren. Beautiful little bird too, this little sticky up tail. Now, as well as singing, of course, like most other birds, they have alarm calls. And you can be walking along through the undergrowth and you'll hear this harsh a ticking. And that's a wren scolding you. And you'd probably be looking for something really large. You can quite often mistake wrens for mice as well, because when they're feeding, very often they're down on the ground and they're hunting around amongst the vegetation just like a mouse, keeping very low and working their way along the ground. I think what's happening is that they're looking up through the leaves, and that way they can see any creepy crawlies that are about. Must be very tough for a bird that stays in Britain all through the winter, such a tiny bird, to keep warm at night. And they've been known to crowd into nest boxes in order to keep warm, fluff up together. Well, what sort of food could they find in the middle of the winter? I suppose spiders must be quite an important source of food, and certainly at the Wildfowl Trust, when we had a lot of snow, one wren came indoors in the building and was looking for cobwebs and spiders up in the roof, not trying to get out at all. And our hides had wrens creeping in and out looking for spiders, and quite often you can be sat looking out of a window and the wren will be hunting round the window frame, looking straight in at you, but actually looking for spiders, so he doesn't really take any notice of you at all. Robins too stay all winter, and they make use of man in order to help them get enough food. Now, in order to make sure there's enough food that goes round, it's quite important that they have a patch which is theirs and other robins stay out. So unlike most birds, which flock up in the winter, robins keep a territory of their own. So in fact, they will sing right through the winter and hold themselves a territory. Now, that's not just the male, because it's the male that usually sings. The female sings as well, and that creates a problem, because if they both sing and they both look alike, I wonder how they tell each other apart. Well, here's the robin's song, a rather melancholy, that means sad, winter song. That's a real sound of the winter, isn't it? As well as having to survive off much the same kinds of food in the winter, the robin and the wren both make the same kind of nests in the spring. They find a little nook or a cranny and build their nest out of mosses and grasses and maybe a few feathers, and they're neat little nests, very carefully built. But it's the male who actually starts the nest off. The cockbird goes around and selects various sites And of course, many of you have seen pictures of robins or wrens nesting in kettles or old flower pots or bits of old washing machine or just about anything that's going. But in fact, they may not use all these nests, because it's up to the husband to select a few sites. He sort of visits all the estate agents and decides which ones are likely. And then his wife goes around and has a good look at them all and decides which one she's going to use. And, you know, she'll have a look into one and say, "Oh, I don't think much of the sight of this one. The view from the window is not too good. Let's go and have a look at the one down the road." And eventually she'll decide that one is just right for her, and then they'll get together and they'll finish building it. So you can find lots of little robins or wren's nests lying about that are unused. But as I've said before when we were talking about blackbirds, never ever go poking around in nests in the summertime or the springtime or even in the autumn, because some birds nest a second time later on. But in the middle of the winter, that's the time to go looking for nests. How do the robins and wrens tell the males and females apart, by the way?
Well, I suppose they work it out in much the same way that we do.
Well, I think I found out how the male robin and the female robin tell each other apart. There's a very famous bird watcher called Dr. David Lack, who wrote a book about the robin. And when he was doing his work on the robin, he discovered that the males and females sang in the winter. They both had the red breast, and they couldn't tell each other apart. But for all intents and purposes, they were both males. When another robin comes into a robin's territory, the robin who owns the patch, that territory, fluffs up his red breast as big as he can and shows it off. And that red breast is like a red flag to a bull. It means, get out of here, I'm the boss. Now, if the other robin shows its red breast, it means that he's threatening as well, and a fight will follow. Now, David Lack took just a stuffed robin and he put it on a post in his garden with its red breast showing, and sure enough, the local robin attacked it. And then he started taking bits of the stuffed robin away. And in the end, he just ended up with the red feathers. And you know, that robin still attacked it. If he put the brown feathers, the robin wouldn't attack it. But if it was red feathers, then the robin would attack them. Not only that, but a lump of red wool was enough at times as well. When he got really angry, didn't even need to be feathers. The colour set him off alone. Now, if you're a female robin and it's spring, and instead of having this other robin attack you, you want him to be a friend, what you do is you hide your red. So it all depends on how you behave. If you meet a threat by putting your red breast downwards and just showing the brown part of your body, that means I'm a female and I don't mean you any harm. So that's how they do it. I've often wondered why people so often put robins on Christmas cards.
Yes, it's quite an interesting story, really. When mail was first delivered by proper postman, the postman had a special uniform, part of which was a bright red waistcoat. They were called robins or robin postmen or redbreasts, and I suppose it was a fairly short step from there to a joke at Christmas time to have a robin redbreast on your Christmas card delivered by a robin redbreast postman.
Gosh, I didn't know that. There's a religious significance as well, isn't there?
Yes, many birds which have red markings on them were reputed to have helped Christ in some way on the cross or at the time of the crucifixion. The robin is one of them, so is the swallow and the woodpecker. The robin tried to ease Christ's suffering by pulling a thorn from the crown of thorns, and of course was stained red by Christ's blood and has retained the red patch on its breast ever since.
And are there any stories like that about the wren as well?
Well, there's a lovely old story about the wren. The wren, of course, as you know, is the king of the birds, not the eagle as is supposed to be. The birds had always wanted a king. They wanted to be like the animals and have a magnificent king like the lion. So they decided that the best way to choose one was to hold a competition. And being birds, they'd hold a flying competition, obviously. Well, of course, the eagle thought that he'd won this hands down. He wasn't going to have to try very hard. And on the day of the competition, off he went, soaring up into the air. He got about as high as he could possibly go, and from out of the feathers on his back shot a tiny wren that flew another 3 feet or so into the air, and then plummeted down to earth, and it was awarded the title of King of the Birds, of course. It had flown the highest. It had cheated, of course, but then what could they do? You can't see the crown on the wren, but if you look at Britain's smallest bird, the goldcrest, which used to be known as the golden-crested wren, you'll see that that actually has got the golden crown that it won in the competition.
I'm going to look for that. Well, the wren, as well as being the king of birds, in some parts of the country was the king of the winter as well, wasn't he?
Yes, there were various festivals, usually held on St. Stephen's Day, on Boxing Day, the day after Christmas, when people caught and killed the king of the birds. And of course it was much easier to catch and kill a wren than to catch and kill an eagle. It didn't fight so much.
And then they dressed it up in ribbons and paraded it around the town.
That's right, and sang various carols to show that the winter was dead and that the spring would soon be with them.
I've brought Alison, who comes from South Wales, and Hannah, who comes from America, to sing you a song about the hunting of the wren that comes from Pembrokeshire in South Wales.